This week, our guest's tragic childhood leads to decades of drug abuse and bad decisions. But overcoming addiction was easy compared to the rest of the story. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Hello, people, and welcome to another unbelievable story on My Crazy Divorce. I'm your host, Tom Milligan, and I am happy to have you with me again this week. This week's story, like all our stories, is pretty damn crazy. It's a story of broken dreams, an unplanned pregnancy, a rushed wedding, drugs, and overall bad decisions. Oh, I almost forgot. There's also a divorce story somewhere in there, too. Before we get to it, we have to do this. Look, we're always looking for guests to be on the show. So if you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share, please visit mycrazydivorce.com right now and click on the apply to be a guest button so we can connect. I promise you'll have a great time recording the show with me. I'm a lot of fun. Next, remember, I'm not an attorney. I've never wanted to be one, never acted like one, and hope to never become one. What that means is that nothing I say on this show or anywhere else should ever be considered legal advice. That would be a bad decision on your part. And finally, I know I say this every week, but if you haven't taken the time, it's all of 5 seconds, to give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you're using to listen to this show right now, please go do that right now. You can pause the show and do it. I promise we'll be here when you get back. This week's story starts in Smyrna, Georgia, where Karen grew up. Karen's parents divorced pretty soon after she was born, and both of them remarried. Growing up, church attendance was not optional and really stuck. The church was her backbone and always something she knew would be there. At an early age, she knew she'd raise her children to lean on the church as well. But despite her faith and upbringing, Karen had made some poor decisions, especially when it comes to men. And as a result, at about 45 years old, she'd been divorced 3 times and was raising her 6-year-old daughter on her own. And one night around June of 2007, Karen has a rare night out with friends, and they go to a local bar. At some point, Karen notices a man looking her way, so she smiles, hoping he'll come over and say hello. When he doesn't, she takes matters into her own hands, walks over, and asks him to dance. She felt an instant connection with this guy, James, so they hung out the rest of the night, dancing and talking. Could James finally be the one? Well, let's meet James.
Never met my real father. He was not a part of my life. Never got to meet him until much later on. My mom, Sarah, she had met my stepfather, and he adopted me from the time I was a baby. So I grew up with him and her, and it was a pretty typical childhood.
You see what I did there? You thought Karen was the guest, right? Yeah, I like to mix things up a bit. Anyway, as you just heard, James never really knew his biological father and instead was raised by his stepdad, who adopted him as a baby. Seems like a good enough guy, though. So what James just called a typical childhood was only typical until James was about 13, and his dad got very sick.
He had gotten lung cancer, developed tuberculosis, got terminally ill. And we lived in Memphis, Tennessee at the time and decided that Florida was going to be better for him. So we moved there to Florida, or here to Florida. And from the time I was 13 to the time I was 18 until he died, I basically was taking care of my dad. I had to help bathe him, shave him, wash him, and all the other stuff. And all at the same time trying to play football and do all the regular things that regular kids do, but it was never normal for, all throughout high school. It was kind of, didn't have much of a childhood.
Yeah, it's tough to be a kid when your dad is in a hospital bed in the living room requiring constant care. But caring for someone you love and who loves you back is natural and worth the sacrifice.
He was a great father up until that point. When he got sick and when he found out that he was terminal, his whole attitude towards me changed. He didn't like me. You know, he didn't treat me real good. Kind of abusive. I hate to say kind of. He was definitely abusive.
Damn. I've heard of others whose personality changed dramatically when they're terminally ill. I don't know if it's the illness, the medications, the depression, or a combination, but it just sucks that he became abusive towards James. So this goes on for a couple of years. James comes home from school one day knowing he's just going to have to spend the rest of the day caring for Dad when he gets more bad news.
I came home from school one day and she was packing up her things and I was like, where are you going? She said, I found an apartment across town and I'm going to be living there. She said, you can come live with me if you want. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, my mom's across town. My dad's here dying. How do you make a decision? You know, you're 16, 17 years old.
Wow. What a decision. Go live with your mom and abandon the only father you've ever known? Or stay with Dad, knowing that means you're basically his nurse. And you're 16 years old. He decided to go with Mom, but it didn't last long. She started dating someone pretty quickly, and James resented her for it.
It's hard to explain what she was going through. But I know as a child, what I was going through was horrible. Like, my whole world was falling apart. I couldn't play football my last year because I was too busy taking care of my dad. I had one thing on my mind. How do I leave this situation? Because my mom's left. It makes sense for me to leave.
James had to get out. He knew football wasn't his ticket out, and his grades pretty much sucked. So he decided to join the military. But first, he had to finish high school.
That last year, I actually had failed high school. Directly after high school, I went to summer school. It started around in June. My deployment date to go into the service was late July.
Uh-oh. He's cutting that pretty close. He not only needed to pass the class, but he needed to leave a few days early. So he begged the principal and got his agreement that James could leave early if he met all the requirements.
I wanted out of the situation so bad that I didn't give myself a choice. So I worked and I worked. I went ahead chapters of, you know, in front of everybody else just to get things done. Come graduation time, I turned in my last essay and my last bit of work, and they let me graduate, let me have my diploma so I could go off to the service. And I left for boot camp literally the next day.
Great. Maybe the Navy is the best thing for James.
I was not ready for that. I mean, I was too young to make that kind of a decision. I think it's good for some people at 18 if they got good, proper upbringing, but mine was made out of desperation. I needed somewhere to escape to. Took an ASVAB, scored well on it. I was supposed to go in for air traffic controller. And so when I went in, I could not focus enough on the process. So I ended up going into avionics technician and got stationed in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, all right. I'm sure a lot of new recruits don't get their dream assignment. All James has to do is buckle down like he did in summer school, and he can make it work.
I treated it like vacation. I mean, because for me, it was a break. I mean, I work 8 hours a day, and I come home, my rent's paid, my food's paid for. You know, it became really party time.
Well, okay then. After a couple of years of vacation and partying in the Navy, James was stationed in Bermuda when he got word that his dad had died. He flew home for the funeral, and he really didn't want to go back.
I went back reluctantly, and I just goofed off. I made a lot of mistakes. Like I said, losing my childhood and living out of rebellion at the time, I was like, the service is not for me, just for the simple fact that I just got out from underneath this authority that I hated, and I went into a service where again, I'm, you know, I'm under somebody's authority. I just wanted to be me.
James somehow made it through his time and was honorably discharged from the U.S. Navy. In my mind, I'm seeing those tearful family reunions on social media where the soldier surprises their family. So how was James's reunion?
I did not bother telling my mom.
Oh, that's not what I'd expected. But at least he's out, right? No longer under anyone's authority. So he can do whatever he wants.
I, you know, worked in a restaurant, and I really, it was my first time where I kind of experienced what it was like to have nothing. I lived in a room of a little old lady's house, and I did that for as long as I could. I couldn't hold the job. I couldn't hold the residence. So here I am, 20 years old, and can't hold a job, can't hold a place, and I'm sleeping on top of a freezer behind a restaurant. That's embarrassing. Good God. But I remember it well because it was warm. It was warm up top. But I held that job in that restaurant for a while until they fired me, and then I was just, I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of started traveling around Florida a little bit, staying with different friends, couch surfing, doing whatever I could. Ended up getting into some drugs real bad.
Not good at all. Remember Karen from the introduction? This is the guy she asks to dance in a few years. James has some growing up to do.
I lived in Gainesville, Florida, met some exciting people, and lived some kind of crazy life there for a while. It's really a blur. I mean, but that was the beginning of what was just a series of really bad decision making.
Okay. Not the right direction, James.
I did eventually call my mom, tell her that I'm no longer in the service and I'd like to come home. And she said, come on home. So I came home and she was in the process of dating another guy. His name is John Brannigan.
I'm glad he finally called his mom. James didn't like the last guy mom was dating. I hope things are different this time.
He was 10 times the dad. That the dad that raised me, he told me right off, he said, I'm not here to replace your dad. I'm just here to be your friend and help guide you. If you're making a mistake, I'll let you know, but I'm going to let you make it. And I appreciated that because the other guys that she dated tried to be that fake friend that wants to be your friend, wants to be your best buddy. And you could see right through that. Even as a kid, you could see through that kind of stuff.
Hey, men, did you hear that? If you're dating single moms, you should rewind and listen to that last part again.
John wasn't like that. He was law enforcement. He was very to the point. He basically set me down one day and he said, look, I'm not here to replace your dad. But I want to help. If there's anything you need, you know, you let me know and we'll try to make it happen. So at the time I needed work and I needed a place to stay and he got me both. He got me a job at a food distributor company and he got me a little efficiency apartment, $300 a month.
Wow. John Brannigan seems like an amazing guy.
You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. That comes up to mind that, you know, he helped me out and did some things for me, helped me get a vehicle and everything else. But there's still this other thing in the back of my head saying, you know, I've got it. I can do it. I can handle this. And I ended up meeting a girl, at a bar.
I don't like where this is going at all.
We hung out. We dated for about, I don't know, 6 months or so, and then she got pregnant. And I wanted to be married to her. I thought, you know, and she was older than me. She had three girls of her own, recently divorced, and I thought, well, we can do this. So here I am. I've not ever had anything in my life, and I go get married to a woman who's got three kids.
Yeah, I think we all know where this is going, right?
So here I am with a wife and four children. I have a job making $6 an hour, $5 an hour, whatever it is. And I'm working 60, 70 hours a week. And I get to be real resentful again. You know, I put myself here, but, you know, course, it's everybody else's fault when you're 21 years old. And I became an abuser.
Whoa, that's not where I thought it was going. If you've listened to the show, you know I won't hold back on my thoughts on cheaters or abusers. And I'm not about to hold back now. Shame on James. I don't care how bad your childhood was, how resentful you were, or any other excuse you want to come up with. There is never an excuse for an abuse. Self-defense, yes. Abuse, no. So how severe was this abuse anyway?
Verbally and physically. Eventually physically, and that led me to go to jail. Went to jail 2 or 3 times for it. And eventually, I had to start going to these classes, anger management classes, and admit to what I was, and I knew what I was.
Well, that just sucks. I got to tell you, when James said those words during the interview, I was torn between my disappointment in him for being an abuser and my respect for him for owning his problem and taking care of it. I'll just repeat here that it's never okay. But please don't write him off just yet. By the end of the show, I think you'll agree he's actually a pretty great guy.
6-7 months down the line, I came home and she said, I want a divorce and I want you out. And, here I am thinking that I'm doing everything that I can do to try and make this work. And she, it was already too late. She basically wanted out. And I don't blame her. I mean, I was a dick. Can I say that? Okay. Yeah, I was a dick. So I was a jerk. Hurt my wife, hurt my kids, hurt myself. I mean, I was abusive to everybody, anybody close to me. I became a jerk. And that's hard to say, but I don't have a problem saying it because I'm not the same person today. But yeah, I was a real, real bad jerk.
She didn't leave right then, so James was pretty sure she'd get over it. Remember, he'd stopped the abuse.
I went on that next trip to go out of town to work, and when I came back home, everything was gone. And the house was sold, and she was gone. Good for her, because really, I was that bad.
Well, there you go. Done. So he's lost his family. Does that scare him straight? Does that put him on the path to dance the night away with Karen?
That started a whole nother process of making more bad decisions. Like, I felt sorry for myself. I figured, you know what? There's nothing really holding me here. My mom and my dad, they've had enough. They've been watching me for 3 or 4 years then. At that point, just make mistake after mistake and figure, he's beyond help. We need to let him fall. And really, that's what I did. I fell. I took a job in an industry doing cell phone tower work. And really, man, that's not a good industry for guys that are in my position who are prone to do drugs or drink too much or anything like that. So I took that job and I traveled, did really well at it for a few years. But then, I ended up with the wrong crew, and really, I was in a bad place in my mind.
Oh, hell. Here we go again.
I hadn't spoken to my daughter, hadn't done anything for them, had no contact with my ex.
No contact with the ex may be the right thing to do, but his daughter? Why would he do that?
My parents asked me not to. They kept in touch with her, and they said, look, don't ever contact her again. And so to this day, I still haven't done that. So I have a daughter out there. She's 27, actually 28 now, and she's doing fine. I follow her on social media. She doesn't know. Maybe after this. Who knows?
That hurts. But yeah, after this, maybe there will be contact and they can build a relationship. So James is traveling all over working on cell towers.
During that 10 years from the time I was 21 to 31, basically homeless. I wherever I worked, they would pay for my hotels because that was a traveling type of job, and I never wanted to quit working, so I just kept doing that. And I knew that being an abuser, I had no business in a relationship, and so I never looked for one. I wasn't wanting one. I didn't long for one. I just wanted to be by myself, work, do my drugs. That's really it. I knew I was no good for really anybody, especially after going through the anger management classes. I realized how damaged I really was, and it wasn't really a shock once I spoke to my counselors and things like that.
It really does seem like he's painfully aware of his problem and is doing what needs to be done to resolve it, even if it means never being in another relationship. But like so many other good ideas he's had, this one didn't keep him from making bad decisions and doing stupid things. Bluntly, James started doing drugs and became a full-on crackhead. We pick up his story 10 years later. He had continued working on cell towers while jacked up on crack cocaine until he was not only fired from that job, but blackballed in the entire industry.
I'm living in this little hotel with other crackheads, sleeping on the floor, roaches, rats, and everything else. It was disgusting. I'm 160 pounds, and really, I had this moment in time where I knew that if I didn't leave there, I was going to die in that hotel room alone, and nobody would even know. Nobody would even care.
That fear of dying alone on the floor of a shitty hotel got him off his ass.
I called my mom. I hadn't talked to her in probably 3 or 4 years. She thought I was actually dead. But I called her up from a payphone, and I said, "Mom, can I come home?" She said, "What's wrong?" And And I told her, I said, "I'm on drugs real bad, and if I don't leave here today, I'm going to die here. Like, the pull is too strong right now. I'm not under any kind of influence. I got to leave."
Mom said to come home. James borrowed $40 for gas and drove his shitty car as fast as he could from Texas to Mississippi. I know I say this all the time, but can we normalize relying on our support network for help before we hit rock bottom?
I went to my mom's and I just slept for 3 weeks. That's all I did was sleep, trying to let my body relax and get back to a regular heartbeat. Somewhere around 3-4 weeks into it, my dad, John Brannigan, he gets me up and he says, "So where do you want to go?" And I thought, "Well, I'm right here. This is where I'm at. What's wrong with this?" And he said, "No, this is mine. You have to go make your own life."
Well played, John Brannigan. Tough love.
And the only place I could think of to go was Atlanta, Georgia, because I had done a lot of work around here. Problem was, there was a lot of drugs around Atlanta, too. So when I got there, the first thing I did was relapse, and I did that for like a day. I knew that it was not something that I could do. So I ended up getting a job with another tower company.
Well, that almost backfired. I'm glad his relapse was only for a day, but he's back in the cell tower business, living in hotels. Not a good place for James. But this was in the fall of 2001. Then 9/11 happened, and the economy went to shit. So James was actually laid off.
I roomated with a couple of good guys that did not do drugs. They didn't do anything. They were reputable people, respectable guys. So I ended up staying with them.
Good. Having the right friends makes a huge difference. I'll be 54 years old in a few weeks, and as I look back on my life, especially my teen years, I consider myself flat out lucky to have had the friends I've had. If I'd fallen in with a different crowd back then, I'm almost sure I'd either be dead or sleeping on the floor of a shitty hotel like James did. I suggest you pause the show right now and take inventory of your friends. Are they good for you? If not, find new ones. Anyway, one of James' new friends helped him find a new job, this time in a different industry.
Started installing satellite dishes for Dish Network and DirecTV. Had to learn how to do that business. And so here I am. I'm about 2-3 months into that, and I'm making $100-$150 a day. Nothing great. And me and my roommates, we decided to go out one night, and I'm clean off of drugs. I haven't touched any drugs or anything in the past 6 months at that point. And it's June or so, and we go out, and we go to a little bar, and this woman catches my eye from across the room.
Remember Karen? Well, here she is, smiling at drug-free for over 6 months James from across the bar. Neither of them knows that they're about to dance the night away.
She approaches me, asks me to dance, and we danced, and we hit it off. We ended up just that whole night. We never left each other's side and had great conversation. She was not like a typical girl that you meet in a bar. So I enjoyed that about her, and we began dating. And dating her was like drinking water, like it felt natural. You know what I'm saying? So we had a really good relationship.
Okay, let's be real for a minute. James and Karen both bring a lot of baggage to any relationship. But for now, it sounds like love at first sight, so let's be happy for them. James and Karen start dating, and things get serious pretty quickly.
About 2-3 months into it of dating, she said to me, she's like, why don't you do this on your own? Why don't you start your own business doing what you're doing?
I like it. Karen is thinking big. Why work for someone else when you can make more money doing the same thing working for yourself?
She didn't know my past. Of course, you don't lead in with, hey, I'm homeless and I'm a crackhead. You know, I didn't tell her any of those things. But I told her that I couldn't do it. There's no way I could ever have a business.
Oh, wow. So at least at this point, a couple, 3 months in, Karen doesn't know just how much baggage James brought with him. That's not a good sign, in my opinion, at least.
Long story short, we eventually start the business, and inside of 6 months, I had made like $100,000. So at the beginning of the year, I started off as a homeless crackhead. By December, $97,000 in, I was like, my life is not the same as what it was when I met her. So I knew if she could help bring me to that point, she could help me keep going.
Damn. Talk about a rags to riches story. I'm glad, A, that she pushed him to start his own business, B, that he started it, and C, that he understands how valuable she is.
I wasn't looking for a relationship. I really didn't want that at the time. But when she stepped in and I got clean, it really kind of opened my eyes to what was possible. Because before I didn't see that. I just saw my life as really eventually it was going to end pretty soon. But she helped me see a different side of that.
Things were definitely moving in the right direction for these two. But remember, Karen's backbone was the church. That didn't change when she met James.
She gave me an ultimatum. She said, I don't know if you're a Christian or not, but I go to church. And if we're going to be together, we're going to go to church together. She kind of didn't give me a choice. That's kind of what I needed. So we started going to church on a regular basis, 2-3 times a week. In fact, got really involved, and we stayed in church.
James was on board. He knew he needed direction and guidance. So they're a few months into their relationship. At Karen's suggestion, James had started his own business installing and maintaining satellite dishes.
I'm having to climb on really tall ladders, sometimes climbing high up to get onto a roof. And I had just bought a brand new ladder for this work. And apparently there was a defect in the ladder that I didn't know about. And about 3-4 rungs down, I was 30 feet up in the air, 3-4 rungs down, the ladder snaps up at the top. I hit the top of the roof that I'm on, that flipped me upside down, and I went headfirst into a driveway from 30 feet. I probably should have died at that point. Well, I get up off the ground. I don't know how, but I get up off the ground and I go to the customer's house and I knock on the door, tell them I need an ambulance. I fell off the roof and I collapsed in their living room. When I came to, I was in an ambulance. I grabbed my cell phone and I called my boss, called my mom, because I wasn't sure. At this point, I can't move. I don't know what's going on 100%. And I call Karen, which is just my girlfriend at the time. We had just been dating. And I called her and I said, can you come get me at the hospital? And she said, what hospital? Yeah, what's wrong? And I said, I fell upside down head first into a driveway and I'm going to Grady. is where they're telling me I'm going. So the paramedic then at that point said he's going to be in the ICU at Grady Hospital, probably going to be in whatever they called the Red Wing. I don't know what that was about, but that was enough to get her in her car, and she and her daughter immediately came to the hospital to see what was going on. I remember waking up, and she was there holding my hand, praying for me. Because I could hear the doctor saying, we don't know if he will really get up and walk again. He hasn't moved since he collapsed in the people's home. We had to transport him from there. So, but she stayed and prayed. So end of that day, I got up and walked out of the hospital. And that's really where I kind of knew that would be my wife right then, you know. At the time, we were just dating, but I hadn't really, golly, don't ask me questions like that. But anyway, so at that point, I knew that she was going to be my wife.
That's a great story, and I was touched by how emotional James got. It's clear that she cared about him deeply, and as James said, that's when he knew.
She was self-employed. She painted murals and things like that. And so her schedule was flexible, and she knew she could take care of me if I was at her house. And so I ended up staying on her couch for about 2 months. I moved out for a short time, but during that 2 months, we lived together. I had broken back and broken ribs and, collapsed, lung and everything else. And she nursed me through every bit of that, took care of me really well.
Karen is awesome. James is lucky to have her.
From that point on, we were just inseparable. We started doing trips together, little vacations, not anything big. We go up to the mountains for the weekend and get a cabin, or we do, just weekend getaways we just never left each other's side from that point on.
Seriously, what a great love story. If we stopped right now, this would be the perfect Hallmark movie, right? Not so fast. We haven't gotten to the crazy part yet.
Hey guys, this is Jill from OurDivorce.com. Pretty much everyone has either been through a crazy divorce or knows somebody else who has. When Tom and I designed OurDivorce.com, we knew it wouldn't work for everyone. We knew that there would still be people out there who'd rather pay their attorney to send an email to their soon-to-be ex's attorney threatening to go to court over the blunder. We didn't build OurDivorce.com for those people. We designed OurDivorce.com for divorcing couples who are willing to compromise and who, instead of spending money on an attorney, would rather just get it done while using Our Divorce's quick, easy, and intuitive process. So you have a couple of choices if you're thinking of divorce. You can choose to spend thousands of dollars hoping you win in court after years of fighting. Or you can go to OurDivorce.com, follow our three-step process at your own pace, then print, sign, and file with the courts, all for just $299. Seems like a no-brainer to me. So visit OurDivorce.com and click Get Started to access the most effective, easy-to-use, and comprehensive online divorce solution available today.
Perhaps they both realized they'd gotten physical too quickly in past relationships and wanted to do things differently this time. Or maybe their religious beliefs shaped their behavior. But for whatever reason, James and Karen weren't intimate for the first several months of their relationship. At some point, that changed. And Karen was pregnant.
When we got engaged, she was already pregnant for a month. We knew that she was pregnant for a month. And being from a church background, we didn't want to give that image to anybody. You know, that was kind of our little secret. So we planned our wedding really quickly. and we got married very quickly. It wasn't planned so much, the engagement. There wasn't much of an engagement. I got down on my knee in the kitchen and said, "Will you marry me?" She said yes, and we made plans that very next month to get married.
If you're keeping score at home, the score is Karen 4, James 2.
When we got married, Everything was beautiful. It was perfect. Great song picked out and everything for the wedding. It was Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Everybody knows that song.
For the record, I have no idea what song he's talking about, but it must be good.
We got married and it was great. Then we had our reception downstairs in the meeting hall where everybody ate. You know, you're Baptist, you eat after church. So we all have that area that we meet at.
Sounds like their church family really helped make their day special.
I had watched one too many home videos, the funniest home videos series when I was a kid. So I thought it was kind of one of those things where you're supposed to smash your wife's face in the cake.
Uh-oh. I think we've all seen it done. But there's a reason those videos are on TV. Because it's not the norm, James.
I think that was the beginning of the end.
Oh, crap.
She was so mad.
Of course she was mad. She's got cake all over her face and probably in her hair and on her dress. What was he thinking?
I didn't think she was going to be mad. I thought she was going to laugh. I thought everybody was going to laugh. This is what they do on Funniest Home Videos, right?
All right. I think we can all agree that was a pretty bad move on James' part. But then all hell breaks loose downstairs at the Baptist church.
I immediately started off down the hall because she had grabbed a knife. I don't know if it was in joke or not. I really don't. But the preacher's coming after us, and he's yelling at Karen. He said, "Till death do you part." And my wife's yelling back, you know, it's about to happen.
Karen got a knife? Seriously?
We had a discussion after that. Wasn't pleasant. I got my piece of cake. She got her piece of cake. She fed me my piece. I take my piece, and I cram it right down her throat. Icing everywhere.
Well, that sucks. Our newlyweds somehow got past the initial trauma of married life and started their lives together. A few months into their marriage, their son, Jason, is born.
Our son, Jason, he is perfect. He has zero flaws, never got sick, never cried at night, didn't have any problems.
Sounds like a dream baby, right?
Our business did really well. I mean, we're talking about for about 6 years until 2008. I mean, I felt like a king. Like, golly, this is what life is supposed to be like. And 2008 hits, economy crashes, and I was so dependent on people buying my service and things like that that... And I didn't have any other backup thing, you know, but people stopped, you know, doing things. So we went through an economic issue. We lost our home. We ended up moving up to Northeast Georgia.
Oh, no. Our rags to riches story is back to rags. But that's not the half of it.
We had just had another child, our second son, John. He's a big part of this. From the time he was 6 months old, he had an issue with his skin. He would always scratch. And he would scratch till he bled all the time. And his symptoms really started to come out at night. And from the time he was 6 months old, he needed soothing at night. We didn't know what was going on with him. We had no idea. But it wasn't leaving, and it would just get worse at night. And it was so bad, and it would last all night long. You know, that my wife would have to get up with him and go sleep in his bed with him. She'd have to take care of him at night. And that was the beginning of us eventually becoming more roommates.
That's tragic. Even with the cake incident, it seemed like James and Karen were perfect together. But to have a sick child and lose everything at the same time is just, well, insurmountable. After losing everything, James and Karen moved their family to Northeast Georgia for a new start. And James had started his satellite business again. Life was moving along.
In 2012, I think she had had enough. We had a nice home. I came home one day, and she was packing up everything onto a trailer. We had only been in the home that we had just gotten a few months, and she was leaving. There was no warning. It wasn't like, hey, I'm unhappy. There was nothing. I just knew we weren't sleeping together. That was really our biggest thing, was we didn't have any physical contact. Man, that was rough. But she ended up leaving, and I begged her to stay.
Physical contact is part of any successful marriage, period. James still loved Karen and wasn't ready to end the marriage.
For 6 months, I stayed in it, trying to convince her to come back home, and she didn't want to. I remember having one last conversation with her. I went over to her house, and, you know, she had told me that she had filed paperwork. I hadn't seen any of it yet, but I asked her. I said, are you sure this is what you want to do? I got down on my hands and knees and begged her, and she said, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
I can totally picture the scene, because I've been there. Then James asked the question I'm sure we're all asking.
And I said, well, is there somebody else? I thought maybe somebody else had entered the picture or something. You know, you go through all these things in your mind. What could it be? I mean, if it's just not sleeping together, I mean, we can try and work something out. I don't know. I didn't know. Well, I asked her three times to change her mind. She never would. And she said, go live your life. Go be happy.
So she's not leaving him for another man. She's just leaving. And she wants him to be happy. Sounds like this will be quick and easy. And with Karen's blessing, James sets out to be happy.
I was new to Facebook. Facebook wasn't even a thing for me. But she was on it, the girl I was dating, and so was my soon-to-be ex-wife. They're both on Facebook. Well, this girl, she liked to take pictures, and so I'm not a picture guy, not very much. But she wanted to take pictures, and we were out for a 4th of July celebration, and these pictures showed up on Facebook, and my ex-wife called me almost immediately and said, you just couldn't wait, could you? And I didn't know what she was talking
about. Right? What is she talking about? Turns out, Karen knows Tammy, the woman James was seeing.
She said, you just couldn't keep your dick in your pants, could you? And I said, wait, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about divorce, and you said, go be happy. And I told you that I was ready to move on with my life, and this is what I'm doing. And she said, well, you could have at least waited a little bit. And I said, it's been 6 months. You told me that I have divorce papers waiting to be signed, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm ready to move on with my life. I gotta move on. And she said, well, Tammy, I grew up with Tammy. I had no idea that they were friends. So I went to Tammy's house and got her to pull up her Facebook. And I said, do you know Karen? She said, oh, my God, is that your wife? And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, my parents and her parents are next door neighbors.
Awkward. James and Tammy go to Florida together for a class reunion. And while they're there, Karen calls James and says they need to have a talk when he gets home. I'm sure he was looking forward to that meeting.
I go to her house and we have this talk, and she said, we need to try again. So I am trying to compare, you know, we all go through our mind, what is this really about? Is this just the jealousy? And I told her, I said, you know, if this is jealousy, forget about it, because I don't want any part of it. That's you reaching out, and it won't last. And she said, no, it has nothing to do with jealousy. I'm friends with Tammy, and that won't change. But I really want to work on the marriage.
Well, Karen, it would have been nice to have worked on the marriage before James groveled for 6 months, got on his knees and begged you to stay, and was invited by you to go live his life and be happy. I'm honestly not sure what I would do in that situation.
I went to Tammy and I told her, I said, we got to break up. I said, I can't compare a couple months to 10 years, what we had. You begin weighing those odds and you think about your kids and everything else. It's worth it to go back and give that another shot. So I did. And it was like we were married all over again. Everything was fresh. Everything was new. We were both doing well, you know, financially and everything else. We had put our family and our home back together, and everything just seemed perfect.
James took the high road and went back to Karen and his family. It really looks like James is trying to do the right thing. I'm impressed.
Meanwhile, my son, John, we call him Big John, is still going through his issues. He's getting older and it's getting worse. His skin is much, much worse. We still don't know exactly what's wrong with him at that point. We had heard a couple of diagnoses, but the fact is, every night, all night, he scratches till he bleeds. He'd scratch down to the bone in some cases. It would get in his face and his hair and his body and his back and his legs. I mean, the poor kid, he's been through hell. He's at this point, he's already started talking about suicide. I mean, he's 9-10 years old. Shouldn't even know what suicide is, but he knows he doesn't want to be here anymore.
My heart hurts for John and his parents. That can't be good for their marriage.
So she's taking care of him. I'm working, paying bills, and we settle back into the space where that's your part of the house at night. This is my part, and we'll just hang out during the day or talk during the day, whatever. And it became comfortable doing that. Probably one of the biggest lessons I learned is to not be comfortable. But I didn't know it at that time. Here I am, I'm, 40 years old and still thinking that, that comfortable is good.
What's wrong with comfortable?
2-3 years, 4 years into that, she gets to this point again and she's like, I'm really not happy. I don't think you're happy. And I think we need a divorce. So we start this whole process over again.
Oh, crap. Here we go again.
I waited about 6 months like I did before, and I stay pretty on point with trying to be married. She doesn't want anything to do with me.
Yes, just like last time. But after 6 months of trying to convince her to stay, James was done trying.
I told her, I said, I think it's going to happen this time, and I'm ready to move on. And she reassured me that it was going to happen. You need to move on with your life.
This sounds exactly like last time.
I joined dating sites, but I really don't like dating sites. But I ended up talking with a girl that I went to high school with that I had a huge crush on. Her name is Melissa. Love that girl. Golly. Back in high school, she was just every guy's thing.
Yeah. Exactly like last time.
Things are going along. 2.5-3 months into it, my wife calls me and says, we need to have a talk.
Seriously, this is deja vu all over again.
I felt such obligation, especially with my youngest son. At this point, the doctors were thinking that he has something called Jobe's syndrome, which is really rare. There's only 250 cases of it or so, and prognosis isn't really good. It's a very short lifespan. So going based off of that, I thought, I need to spend as much time with my boys and my wife as I can. So I break it off with Melissa, and I go back home. And I'm trying to be a father, trying to be a husband.
What is it called when you do the same thing over and over, expecting a different result? Oh, yeah. Insanity. They got to try something different if they have any hope.
We decided this time that we're going to do some counseling and go to counseling and try and do this right.
That's a good start. But quite frankly, neither of them were committed to the counseling. So fast forward 2 or 3 years.
My business was doing really well, and I'm meeting people that most people would just dream of meeting. coming from where I came from, I should not have association with certain types of people. But I was friends with millionaires and billionaires at this point, installing home theater and TV systems for these people, and really, really blessed in business wise to work with these people. So I kind of wanted that life. I kind of wanted to step up our life. And she was happy on the side of a hill, you know, living in the house that we lived in. I mean, I tried to make it work, to make her see that we could go on, we could further, but she didn't want to. She was just kind of content where she was at.
How ironic that Karen is the reason James had the courage to start his own business in order to get ahead, but is now content with the status quo. By the way, those millionaires James talked about? Yeah, this dude has Jennifer Aniston's cell number. They're friends. Like every guy my age, I've had a crush on her for what, 30 years now? I keep asking him to introduce us. Nothing so far, but I'll keep you posted on the Tom Milligan-Jennifer Aniston relationship. Anyway, Karen is content, but James wants it all. That's like oil and water.
We have this discussion one day where neither one of us are happy, and she said, let's get a divorce. And I said, okay. So this is the third time? and I said, okay. And within 15 minutes, my bags were packed, and I was out the door.
I don't blame him one bit. Enough is enough.
I wasn't even going to try and ask her, are you sure? You know, at this point, I mean, third time, it's over with, you know what I mean? And you don't want it to be, I mean, but, at some point it is. And so we decided to split and I left. I mean, I left immediately and that's how that went. Her eventual excuse was, I see that you want to go far in life and that you want to live a big life, and that you have a lot of dreams and things that you still haven't finished. And she says, I don't want to stand in your way. She said, I feel like with the issues with our son that I'm holding you back. And she said, I'm just going to let you go.
Sounds reasonable. But it also sounds too much like the prior two times. I'm not convinced we're done yet.
I put her in charge of it, let her get all the paperwork drawn up, let her do all the things to get the divorce, let her spend the money on the attorney. I said, you come up with the paperwork, I'll sign it. I don't care. I'm done at this point. I'm not even going to try and wreck it.
So Karen starts the process of getting the divorce taken care of. If only OurDivorce.com had been around back then, it would have been so easy.
So we actually got along really well after we had made the decision that this was it. You know, we stayed friends. We stayed, continue talking.
Well, that's great to hear. It's always best if divorcing parents can remain friendly so they can be effective co-parents. Friendly or not, James was ready to start living.
I told her, look, I'm going to start dating. And I thought, this is my bad decision-making coming back up here. So I thought, I'll just go start dating somebody. Maybe she'll do this little cycle again. And so I start dating a woman that I had zero business to do with. Like, she was crazy. Legit crazy. Bad narcissist. Really bad. But we dated. I moved in with her. We had both gotten COVID together. I figured we'll stick this out. And 3 months into it, I realized that was like the worst decision of my life.
Damn it, James. That's not going to help you reach your goals at all. So how's that divorce paperwork coming, Karen?
She took care of everything. The only thing that I was left to do in April of this year, she said, the paperwork's almost done. Are you ready to go ahead and get this done? And I said, yeah. And so I was kind of bitter about it through that process. You know, once I first saw the initial paperwork and everything, like, we had been through this process already twice, right? This is the third time. She had said the same thing the other two times, but this time I got paperwork, so I knew it was official then. It kind of hit me You know, maybe somewhere down deep, I was thinking that it's, you know, we'll go through that process again, but it didn't happen. I got served with the papers finally. In fact, I got served with the papers at the girl's house that I was staying with.
Oh, that's rough. Divorce sucks, period. And even though this was round three and James thought it was done, it still hurt. And he still questioned it. Regardless, he got the papers, looked them over, and signed them. And 6 weeks later, they were officially divorced. That sounds so quick and easy, right? Like almost no thought was needed at all.
Nobody gets divorced or leaves the day that they leave. They left, you know, 6 months before that. You know, it didn't happen overnight. It happened 6 months, a year, 2 years prior to that. So when somebody leaves you, don't be surprised that you find out that they've been thinking about this for a long time. And that's, you know, that was her thought process.
I agree. Although I was totally blindsided by my ex-wife's affairs and ultimate decision to get a divorce, I knew she must have been unhappy and thinking about divorce for a very long time. That makes me sad, but it would be even worse if she just came up with the idea one day and then made it happen. James isn't a perfect man. None of us are. But I want to thank him for his courage to share his story, including the parts that didn't make him look so great. I know it wasn't easy for him. James' divorce story is tragic, but when you consider what he's overcome just so far in life, our story is one of determination and triumph. His parting comments as we ended the interview underscore his positive attitude.
Decide what you want to do, and if you wake up on this side of the dirt, you're not done. Go do what you want to do. Keep others in mind. Don't hurt anybody else on your way out. But go make yourself happy, because I really think in life, if you're not happy, and you could be happy if you're working at Burger King, I don't care. As long as you're doing what you wanted to do, go do that. Stop making concessions for everybody else. Because if you're happy, everybody else will be happy. There's that saying where, you know, if the wife's happy, life's happy, right? But that's not always true. You got to do what's good for you. If you can work out a marriage, work it out. If you can't, then cut your losses and move on.
Great advice. That's our show for this week. If you enjoyed that story, please tell the world by giving our show a 5-star rating on whatever app you're listening to us on right now. That would really help us out. A big thank you to OurDivorce.com for their sponsorship of the show. And if you're thinking about divorce and don't want to pay an attorney just to fill out paperwork, go to OurDivorce.com and click on Get Started Today. And as always, if you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share, go to MyCrazyDivorce.com right now and click on the Apply to be a Guest button so we can schedule a recording session. Thanks for listening. That's it for this week. See you next time.
And bring